The 1816 United States presidential election marked the beginning of a fascinating political transition and an era historians often call the era of good feelings. It wasn't just any election. It was one that reflected a country evolving politically, socially, and economically after the War of 1812. James Monroe and Rufus King emerged as the primary candidates, each representing distinct visions of the nation's future. The results? Well, let's just say it wasn't a nail-biter. In fact, it was so lopsided that it defined what we might call a political landslide. But there's more to this story than just the numbers. 1816 was a landslide. James Monroe, the Secretary of State and a key figure in the Democratic-Republican Party, was the clear frontrunner from the outset. His career was steeped in service to the country, from his role in the Revolutionary War to his diplomatic achievements. By 1816, Monroe had become a favorite among those who wanted to continue the policies of the Democratic Republicans under President James Madison. The party had been dominant since Thomas Jefferson's election in 1800, and their grip on the presidency reflected the popularity of their agrarian-focused, states' rights-oriented vision of America. On the other side, we had Rufus King, the Federalist candidate. King was no slouch. He was a respected diplomat, a framer of the Constitution, and a staunch advocate of Federalist principles. But the Federalist Party was struggling to stay relevant. Their opposition to the War of 1812, which many Americans saw as unpatriotic, had left them politically weakened. By 1816, the Federalists were on their last legs as a national force. King's candidacy was more of a last hurrah for the party rather than a serious attempt at victory. Now let's talk about the electorate and the political landscape. The United States in 1816 was a young, expanding nation. The population had grown significantly since the Revolution, and new states like Indiana had just joined the Union. But voting rights were still far from universal. The electorate was largely made up of white men who owned property or met other qualifications, depending on state laws. Women, enslaved people, and most free African Americans were excluded from participating in the democratic process. Even so, there was a growing sense of optimism about the nation's future, fueled by recent victories in the War of 1812 and the continued westward expansion. Economically, the country was in recovery mode. The War of 1812 had disrupted trade and strained resources, but it also stimulated domestic manufacturing, particularly in the Northeast. There was a sense that the United States was on the verge of something bigger, a realization of its potential as a major power. This optimism played well for Monroe and the Democratic Republicans, who positioned themselves as the party of progress and unity. The campaign itself was relatively subdued by today's standards. Monroe didn't have to work too hard to convince people he was the right choice. The Democratic Republicans were so dominant that their nomination process was almost equivalent to winning the general election. Monroe's main challenge came from within his own party during the congressional caucus that selected the nominee. Once he secured the nomination, his path to victory was practically assured. In contrast, Rufus King's campaign faced insurmountable obstacles. The Federalists had become a regional party, strong only in parts of New England. King himself had little in the way of new ideas or a compelling platform to offer voters. His candidacy was more about preserving the Federalist legacy than presenting a genuine alternative to Monroe. Even King likely knew the odds were stacked against him. When the results came in, they confirmed what many already suspected. James Monroe had won in a landslide. Monroe secured 183 electoral votes to King's 34. To put it another way, Monroe won over 84% of the electoral vote, a staggering margin. He carried every state except for Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Delaware, the last remaining Federalist strongholds. This level of dominance reflected the near-total collapse of the Federalist Party as a national force. What made this election particularly significant was not just the size of Monroe's victory, but what it represented. The 1816 election marked the beginning of the end for the first party system in American politics. With the Federalists effectively sidelined, the Democratic Republicans faced little organized opposition. This paved the way for the era of good feelings, a period of relative political unity where partisan conflict seemed to fade, at least for a while. The term landslide is often thrown around in political commentary, but Monroe's victory in 1816 fits the bill in more ways than one. It wasn't just about the numbers, although those were impressive enough. It was about the broader context, the shift in political power, the consensus around Democratic-Republican policies, and the near absence of credible opposition. Monroe's win symbolized a turning point, where the ideals of Jeffersonian democracy seemed to reign supreme. However, the election also highlighted some of the limitations and contradictions of early American democracy. While the political landscape may have appeared unified, there were deep divides beneath the surface. Issues like slavery, regional tensions, and economic inequality were already simmering, even if they didn't dominate the national conversation in 1816. These issues would resurface with a vengeance in the decades to come, but for now, they remained largely in the background. In hindsight, the 1816 election was more than just a political contest. It was a reflection of a nation at a crossroads. Monroe's victory wasn't just a personal triumph. It was a statement about where the country was headed. The overwhelming support for Monroe suggested that Americans were ready to embrace a vision of unity and progress, even if the reality was more complicated. So was it a landslide? Absolutely. But it was also a moment that revealed as much about what was to come as it did about the state of the nation in 1816. Monroe's presidency would go on to shape the trajectory of the United States in profound ways, but the seeds of future conflicts were already being sown. Still, for that brief moment, it must have felt like the dawn of a new era, a time when the country seemed united, optimistic, and ready to take on the challenges of the future.